This is Wade's World, and we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people. Everywhere you go, you can always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather. You take the weather with you.
This is Wade Rathke. It's Friday morning, 9 a.m. to 9:30. This is Wade's World. We're on KABF, www.kabf.org. If you're live streaming, 88.3 on your FM dial. If you're listening to us on the radio, we'll have it up on a podcast by early next week, and you can listen to it if you didn't catch all of the details. This is 100,000 watts of people power, the voice of the people, KABF. You know the story. On Wade's World, every week we talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to my old friend and comrade, Mike Gallagher, who is a former SEIU organizer, ULU organizer. He's been around the track. He's based in Boston now. And he's been looking into some of this situation we've been talking about the last couple of shows on new rules for nonprofit hospitals. Last week we talked to Stephen Brill about his book, Bitter Pill, and we talked to Paul Keel, reporter for ProPublica, who had written about some problems in Missouri. Mike, welcome to Wade's World.
Good morning.
So you've been talking to Paul.
Well, situation in Missouri at a particular hospital in St. Joseph called Heartland Hospital that ran just after the holidays. And it fascinated me so much I gave him a call, and the question I really wanted to ask him was how easy it was to access the names of people, defendants that the hospital, whose wages the hospital was garnishing for medical debt.
So how he got the names of people in trouble?
And it turns out that they're available electronically. Missouri keeps very good records of court cases county by county.
So the reporter was able to just go online and figure out who was being sued by what?
That's how he found people to interview.
And you had some experience doing this in Massachusetts years ago, right?
Yeah, I was working for the Service Employees, the Hospital Workers Union, in rural Cape Cod, and in addition to fighting for better pay and benefits for the workers, we were also fighting for better care, better access to care for low and middle-income people in the Cape Cod area. It was the only acute care hospital for miles around.
A lot of people don't even think of Cape Cod as having low to moderate-income people, do they?
They only think of it as a summer place, but in fact, the rest of the year, it's where regular people live, you know. Anyway, we heard a rumor that, among other things, that the hospital was seizing and selling people's homes for inability to pay their medical bills.
Wow. What'd you do?
We went down to the county courthouse, and sure enough, there was a record of all the people being sued by the hospital. We went out and we got a hold of that list and went out and started talking to people about what we might be able to do about that.
And what were those conversations like? Did people just say, hey, so we're glad to see you, or what the heck, or what?
When you're in debt like that, for anything, I suppose, but particularly for a medical issue, you're humiliated, you're ashamed. So the conversations were very difficult. It was hard getting past the front door. But once we did, we were able to move people from shame to anger.
And what'd they do with that anger?
Well, we were... we were engaged with the hospital on a range of issues, and had already set up a forum with the hospital. And these defendant debt owers became a big part of that forum. We also went on to do all sorts of actions, large and small, at the hospital. We disrupted one of their fundraisers. We, whenever we would hear about a sheriff's sale of a house, we would go out and try to throw a monkey wrench into the process. And eventually, the hospital abandoned that practice altogether and stopped suing people, stopped seizing their houses, stopped selling the homes right out from under sick people.
Well, that's good news. And moving fast forward, that's somewhat going to be the new rule, isn't it?
A nonprofit hospital is supposed to serve a charitable purpose. Suing people, taking their, garnishing their wages, aggressive debt collection, all of that is not charitable, let's say.
Well, and the tax exemption means a huge lot. I don't know what it converts into in terms of money for a lot of these nonprofits, but whether it's Senator Grassley, Chuck Grassley from Iowa, or it's in his long campaign to make sure that if you're going to get a tax exemption, you're going to have to provide charitable service, or some of their competitors argue that these nonprofits are operating just like for-profits. So what the heck? But the new rule that we're talking about was finalized right at the end of 2014 to go into effect now, and the penalties will start accruing in 2016. Says they've got to have very clear rules, doesn't it, Mike?
That's exactly right. Before you can institute these sort of aggressive debt collection measures, you have to have extended patients the possibility of financial assistance.
And you have to make those policies clear to people and repeat it more than once. It can't be, you know, when they go under anesthesia that you're telling them, hey, you know, we might have a program.
And you don't throw people to the courts immediately. There's so many days that you have to work with people on trying to get that bill paid.
Yeah, and
There's no doubt that people have incurred the debt, but if you're uninsured or underinsured, as many people are in Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, Missouri, and you get sick, you're going to rack up a pretty big bill.
Well, and let's talk about how big that bill is, because that's part of the hard problem here is in many cases when some poor Jane or Joe goes in there, low to moderate income family, they're obviously in a desperate situation or they wouldn't be in the hospital.
Right.
But they're charged sticker price in some cases, aren't they?
Yes. The hospitals deeply discount their prices to insurance companies, especially big insurance companies like Blue Cross or big third-party payers like Medicare or Medicaid. Those prices are not available to the general public. You can pay, $39 for an aspirin in a hospital.
So at
and
least
so,
one can expect,
if you're without insurance, you can the bill that you're paying for the same services as an insured person could be 8, 9, 10 times as much.
Well, and so don't you imagine that the least nonprofit hospitals, these tax-exempt hospitals, Catholic hospitals, religiously affiliated hospitals are all in that category and a lot of other hospitals as well, aren't they going to at least have to discount your bill down to the Medicare rates, down to what they give the private insurers? Don't you imagine that?
I think we're going to find out.
Well, and that's part of the point. We're obviously talking about what it takes to make these hospitals accountable and working with Local 100 and a number of other community organizations. We're trying to put together a hospital accountability campaign just for this reason. But it would be hard to imagine that they could make a rule that would deliberately overcharge people who need, who are financially unable to pay. I mean, I think that'd be hard to justify when the IRS does their audit, don't you, Mike?
That's exactly right. And I think the key here is to, as we did way back in my little story about Cape Cod Hospital, the key is to mobilize the defendant, people who are being sued by hospitals to sit down at the table with the hospital and try to renegotiate or negotiate about what those billing practices are going to be going forward.
There's no doubt once people are in the fix, they're going to be open to people who can potentially give them a hand. And obviously our citizen mm-hmm. wealth centers are already dealing with some of those issues. I've talked before on Wage World. We talked to Chris Harrison, who runs the Citizen Wealth Center with Local 100 in Little Rock, about a bill he had for somebody who came in out of St. Vincent's, obviously a religiously affiliated, nonprofit, 501c3, tax-exempt charitable institution, came in with a bill over $10,000 for the cost that Medicare did not cover. And he was able to fairly quickly, this wasn't the most heavy lifting he'd ever had to do, get that knocked down to only $1,300, because what they were doing was padding, you know, I'm going to use the word pad in the bill. They were charging sticker price, the, you know, what you charge, you know, to one of the Rockefellers or Walmarts when they come in for care at St. Vincent's, and not what you charge for.
That gives you an idea of the how much the overcharge is. $10,000 to $1,300. That's pretty significant difference.
And a lot of this problem, I think, you looked into as well on a Missouri case. Even before they go after your houses, it seems like they don't think twice about garnishing your wages.
Yes. So in the bankruptcy law of 1968, which is a federal law which most states use, a creditor can garnish up to 25% of your after-tax pay. So if you're making $10 an hour,
Before taxes,
you're going to be making less.
I mean, taxes, let's say, are 20%, so knock $2 off of that, so $8 is after tax.
Right.
They can take 25% of that. That's another $2. You're left with, two for the government, two for the debtor, and good luck making it on six.
Well, that's a crushing burden for a low-income, moderate-income family.
Well, you can't do it, and that's what Heartland in Missouri, and when we talk about that story, that's what they seem to specialize in, 6,000 or so. I forget the exact number of people who they were getting garnishments of $3 million a year and getting interest on top of that. I mean, I talked to Paul Keel about the interest rate up there. They're getting 9%, and I said, you know, when you can't get a quarter of a percent with your little savings book down at the local bank, how do they justify charging, you know, a poor stiff 9%? And he made the very good point, Mike, that, hey, these laws about interest rates and bankruptcy were passed in the 80s when 9% was almost fair interest. And there's been no adjustment, so that's just another way. The debt collection agency also was not arm's length. That was actually owned by the hospital. So it's all, you know, moving.
In the Missouri case, that's right. The bill collector is a for-profit company that's under the hospital's wing.
So for-profit owned by a nonprofit. And, you know, paying, you know, heavily. I don't know if they still take many people's houses. That's probably a lot longer procedure than just garnishing wages.
In addition to garnishing your wages, they can seize your bank account and whatever might be in there.
Now, I guess they'd have to go to court for that, or no?
Oh, they'd absolutely have to go to court.
So, you know, that's obviously DEFCON. And once again, these new rules say before you take somebody to court, you have to try to, you know, have a conversation. You have to mandatorily have a conversation with that client, patient, and try to see what you can do to work it out. On the whole, we're talking to Mike Gallagher, who's been looking into this hospital accountability issue. He's a former organizer with some experience with hospital workers and other service workers. Mike, part of the problem is going to be how to keep up with all these people. The IRS, review is going to be every couple of years, but they don't have the person power to really do this job, do they?
No, and there's, again, another reason why citizen advocacy might be the key ingredient here. If the IRS and their new regulations are leveraged, but they're not going to get the job done by themselves, then all the more important that we organize and see if we can't hold the hospitals accountable as citizens and patients and
unions and whoever. Yeah, that's exactly right. I just want to remind people, when the Tea Party folks and their, sort of conservative supporters were having this contretemps about, whether or not they were getting their tax exemptions fast enough, and it turned out not to be just them, but progressive organizations as well. It's pretty clear over the last year or two that part of the problem was that the tax-exempt nonprofit section of the IRS has been decimated by cutbacks and funding layoffs over the last couple of years. So you're talking about pretty much a very diminished strike force if they are the ones to be depended on. The other thing that's been amazing to you and I as we've looked into this issue is how quickly not just the Heartlands, but all these hospitals, private, public, state, and whatever, turn these even the smallest debts over to collectors.
Yeah, when you look at the court records, it is interesting that the amounts owed are actually not that great, like $1,200, $1,700. Really, you couldn't find a better way to collect that money than suing people and garnishing their wages? It doesn't sound like much money.
Well, and the way lower than $1,000, $1,200. That the average and median bills are in the $300 to $500 range, and
well, that's just crazy.
Yes, it is crazy.
Well, here's the thing. I think it's crazy to think that hospitals are going to remain solvent and get their services paid for by turning low-income people, moderate-income people upside down and shaking them and see what kind of change falls out of their pockets.
Well, they're hurting them badly, too.
These people need to be insured somehow. And these are the Missouri, Texas, not Arkansas, but others of your neighbors, Louisiana. They're all the states that are resisting Medicaid expansion.
That's exactly right. And this is going to, it also turns out to be one of the big barriers in terms of any development of citizen wealth. These medical debts almost always go right immediately, don't stop for go, right on your credit report. The Consumer Federation was estimating more than 40%. You and I looked at a study made by an outside expert who put the number at 52% of all the sort of blemishes on credit reports come from medical bills. And in some cases, that's, $5 here, $200 there, $50 here. Often disputed charges
that
don't add up.
There's debt and there's debt. So if I get in trouble with my creditors because I charged a color TV on my credit card, that's one thing. But if I fall behind on my payments to the hospital for medical services, that's a whole other thing. All you did was get sick. People get sick. And all these moral hazard eggheads that we saw around come out and blame people around the mortgage foreclosure thing about, well, why did you buy that house if you couldn't afford it? It doesn't apply here. This is medical debt. This is somebody getting sick or someone in their family getting sick, a child, a spouse, whatever. And they ran up a bill all for being sick. And it's outrageous that there's hospitals that will sue you, make your life miserable to recover that debt.
Well, and even the collection agencies themselves, in looking at some of their reports, when they argue what best practices are, they even seem to be closer to some of these new standards being advocated under the Affordable Care Act than the hospitals themselves.
Yeah.
They're arguing, yeah, there has to be, you know, transparency, there have to be efforts to talk to people, there have to, you know, one of the things on the mortgage crisis, when you mentioned that, I mean, don't forget how many people were lied to and how many of these were rogue brokers, but you have to look at affordability, and affordability is now the key factor in looking at mortgages for potential homeowners, whether they can afford it. That has to be true in the medical area, too. We're talking about, yes, people are sick, and when a hospital takes them in and they don't have a choice but to take them in under the Affordable Care Act to the emergency room, regardless of whether or not they have or don't have any ability to pay, when it comes to debt collection and debt, you know, workout terms for medical bills, affordability is going to have to be the key standard.
That's right. And ultimately, what everybody really needs is some form of health insurance, whether that's Obamacare or Medicaid or whatever it might be. If you're without health insurance and you get an appendicitis, a day in the hospital, 2 days in the hospital is going to run you thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, 15, 20 grand.
Insurance. And there is a program available for that.
Well, now you live in Massachusetts, so is there, and obviously the Massachusetts healthcare program under, ironically, Governor Romney. Y'all were first out of the chute on this way before the Affordable Care Act was passed and implemented. How is this handled up there? Do you hear the same kind of problems in Massachusetts?
No. By now, about 97% of the population has health insurance. So you don't find massive numbers of uninsured people. There's 4 million uninsured people in Texas. There's 1 million in Missouri. So these hospitals that are providing services but don't have a third-party payer feel they got to get it out of the patient's pocket. They're really struggling. A number of hospitals, especially rural hospitals in Missouri, have had to lay off and curtail services because they don't have access to reliable payers. A low-income person who gets services, it might be hard getting the money out of them.
Well, and frankly, you know, if we're going to go down that trail, I mean, that's one of the reasons you see Governor of Indiana and Florida and some other states talking about now, surprising some people, because they are, you know, Republicans who've been in, the cheerleading squad, you know, booing Obamacare. But they're getting pressure from their hospitals inside their states who are going out of business because of exactly that kind of disparate economic situation to expand in order to expand Medicaid so that they have more people in the service area who can take care of them, or they're going to go out of business. So, yeah, that's a very good point, and I think the hospitals themselves are going to be aligned with us lobbying for the expansion because they need the coverage too. But you don't find, do you find the same level of garnishment, and you don't find the sort of Cape Cod housing seizures in Massachusetts at this point, do you?
No, not at all. In fact, even before Romney Care, let's call it, the state had what was called a free care pool, and hospitals could provide services, not get paid, and refer the charges to the free care pool and get reimbursed that way.
Well, that's a good program.
Yeah. And that was funded, the free care pool was funded out of a small surcharge on insurance policies. So those who had insurance were, in a way, paying for people who didn't have insurance. And it worked to some extent.
Obviously, it's not good as...
In order to feel entitled to go and get those services, it's better to have an insurance card than to rely on the kindness of strangers.
Well, particularly since those strangers now, even with nonprofit tax exemptions, seem to be ready to, as you say, turn you over and shake you down. That's right.
Yeah.
Mike, part of what we're encouraging people to do is sort of wherever they are in the listening audience, and obviously we're going to do it through Citizen Wealth Centers and the union and our partners, but, you know, even farther, is to do two things, right? One is to let's start having some dialogue with some of these nonprofits now and see if we can find out what the rules they're looking at and how they're writing them, and see if we can at least talk to them about what might be better, best, or, you know, improved practices. And then the other thing, and I know this has been something you've advocated, is we ought to see if we can reach out and give some, you know, aid and help to people who are being crushed by these debt loads and already caught in court and garnishment, and see if there isn't some more reasonable solution for them.
Exactly. And then the third thing I would add is that in each of these states that's resisting Obamacare, resisting Medicaid expansion, maybe these are the troops that we need to help try to push that over the top. I know in Missouri the legislature is dominated by Republicans and absolutely refuses to consider the possibility of Medicaid expansion, even though the governor, former Republican Senator Kit Bond, all the hospitals are pushing for it, but the Republican legislature is hunkered down and absolutely refuses to even consider the idea.
Well, I know people
to push Medicaid expansion over the top. That's for sure.
You never know. I mean, and
exactly.
That's why you know, it's important to wage these campaigns. But in Arkansas, I know there was a lot of trepidation about the election of Asa Hutchinson, new Republican governor there. But one of the first things he said within the first little period in which he was, after he was sworn in, just the last week or two, is, oh yeah, we'll keep the private option and its expansion for the next 2 years. We'll study on it. Now, you know, I'm sure they'll study on it and they'll come up with, you know, some mischief and mayhem. But God, how many times does a politician say we'll study it mean it just got shelved forever and a day? so they may just learn, you know, that the last governor's program and expansion and his private option is the way to go, and I think we're going to have more and more. The Obama administration seems to be handling this smartly, which is, let's bring them in. Even if we have to bend a rule here and weld something on there and tack something a little, you know, use some baling wire and you know, masking tape to make it work, let's bring them in, add $300,000 or $400,000 here, you know, another $500,000 there. Now, some places are going to be, you know, at the schoolhouse door forever, but there's a real chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the real message, and we've been on this story for the last couple of weeks, and, you know, if I get lucky, I'm going to get some more guests the next couple of weeks and stay on this. These nonprofit hospitals, we love them. You count on them. They appeal for contributions and donations and fundraisers. They get a tax exemption worth millions and millions. We need them to step up and do right. Lou Holtz used to be the coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks, and he used to say, don't break the do-right rule. He suspended a couple people before the Orange Bowl game years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Don't break the do-right rule. And they're just not doing right, are they, Mike?
They're not doing right.
So Mike Gallagher, former organizer with SEIU, helping out on the Hospital Accountability Project, working with us on this. Our message is, let's talk to these hospitals, see if we can get the rules together, and let's reach out publicly to and privately to people who are under the gun, in collection, in debt, having their credit ruined, and see if there isn't a way to fix this. There's a lot that needs to be done, and it's not being done now, and that's what we need. This has been Wade's World. We're on every week, Friday 9 to 9:30 on KBF. Live streamed at www.kbf.org. This will be on podcast early next week. You can listen, get the details if there's any other information you need. You can contact me for help on this campaign at www.chieforganizer.org or at wade@chieforganizer.org. This has been Wade Rathke with Wade's World on KBF. Stay tuned for our great show with Alexi.
Profile America, Friday, January 30th. Modern American election cycles engage campaign managers in almost all levels of political races. The man usually credited with